No, I just know that's everybody's favorite gospel passage. No? Does it sound like Jesus is just being completely, absolutely, totally unrealistic? Does he really expect us to do that? Answer would be, yeah. What's he doing? One of the clues is, you know, we're in the last two of what are called six antitheses, where he starts off, you have heard it said, but I say that. We've got the last two, and the first one is, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. That goes back to Moses in the Old Testament. What kind of a problem do you think Moses might have been dealing with? Now, this issue that we have in humanity that goes back to the beginning of humanity, called trying to get revenge or vengeance on somebody for something we perceive that they did to us. And oftentimes it got way out of hand. Someone would steal somebody's cow, and in response, the owner of the cow would go back and wipe out the family. Not the cow family, the human family. So to put some sort of control or restriction on it, they made this thing of eye for eye, tooth for tooth. But now Jesus is changing that and upping the game substantially by saying, no, don't seek vengeance. Don't hate your enemy. Love your enemy. Why? Why would Jesus say that? There's something new going on. This is a part of what's called the Sermon on the Mount, which most people think is restricted to just the Beatitudes that we heard four Sundays ago. But the Beatitudes are the opening of a 3-chapter-long sermon. It's, you know, I invite you to go home and read it. It's chapters 5, 6, and 7 that include the total Sermon on the Mount. And with each part of it, he keeps raising things up to a whole new standard. And then we're sitting there wondering, how on earth can we possibly do this? Go back to the very beginning of it. What was the first of the Beatitudes that we heard when Deacon Mike was preaching several Sundays ago? Blessed are the poor. Yeah, add in the last two words. Blessed are the poor in spirit. What does it mean to be poor in spirit? It's not that we're wandering around with our shoulders all slumped going, I'm in horrible office. No, it's blessed are the poor in spirit. It's a recognition that I can do nothing, absolutely nothing without God. In other words, this stuff that Jesus is preaching in the Sermon on the Mount, do any of us really feel comfortable with trying to think we can actually do it on our own? Can you turn your other cheek? On your own? If somebody's being a complete enemy to you in the way they're acting, can you still love them on your own? Poor in spirit. For everything that God asks of us is realizing that we on our own lack the capacity to either recognize when we need to do it and how to respond to things, and then have the strength to be able to follow through and actually do it. Complete it. It's that poor in spirit. I know I need God's grace for everything, and I mean absolutely everything. Then all of this becomes possible because these two last, you heard it said, but I say, is dealing with one of the most common parts of human existence. Conflict. Now, I'm sure none of you have to do with any conflict in your lives at all anywhere, right? Yeah. Been a priest for 34 years, pastor for 30. I have heard more confessions than I could even begin to try to count. And one of the most common themes of the things that people are confessing, and including things that I've had to confess myself, are various forms of conflict. Husbands, wives, parents, children, brothers, sisters, co-workers, employers, employees, classmates, all the entire spectrum of all kinds of human interactions, There are conflicts in all of them because what's going on? Where do conflicts come from? They just suddenly appear mysteriously out of nowhere. No. Where does conflict come from? It comes from us. It comes out of pride. From mild to major, you've got somebody or a small group who think that they are basically the center of the universe and everything's supposed to revolve around them, what they want, what they need, what they think, what other people should be doing and saying and whatever for them. And when it doesn't happen, what do? They cause conflict. They cause drama. They set up this thing where they're going after whoever they think isn't doing or saying or bringing or whatever that they want. And so, you know, the ugliness starts to ensue. And then where do we make the mistake in response to it? Are we supposed to pour gasoline on a conflict? Please say no. Which is most often, unfortunately, what we actually do. And instead of bringing resolution, we make the conflict grow larger and larger and larger. What is Jesus teaching us? Yes, there's going to be conflict. How we handle it matters a great deal because at the root of it, we're supposed to handle all forms of conflict in a Christ-like manner. You know, there's an old axiom, hurting people hurt other people. They're trying to make themselves feel better by making somebody else feel as bad as or worse than they do. People are prideful and self-centered and think they're the center of the universe. Make other people feel bad because they're not giving me what I want, so I'm going to make your life miserable until you do. And so we start responding in kind, and that Christ-like manner of handling conflict goes out the window, and we do not bear witness. Instead of being part of the solution, we become a part of the problem. Now, that does not mean you need to become a doormat. It's perfectly legitimate that if someone's coming after you to do you some sort of injury, it's okay to defend yourself, but not to escalate the problem and make it worse. It's really hard today because you've got some people who are constantly crying out, well, I'm offended. And offended by what? You know, fill in the blank. There are thousands of options. But how we respond to it is the key, and it always starts with realizing I need His grace to help me through this so that I don't make the problem worse and maybe even cause worse division in a family, in a marriage, in a household, in a workplace, in a school, in a parish, but instead tamp it down, turn the gas down to off, and bring peace. The flip side of that is, you know, it's not always somebody else who's causing the conflict, is it? You know, sometimes we're the ones who think we're the center of the universe and everything's supposed to happen and revolve and be pleasing and satisfy whatever it is we think we need or want. I think the obvious answer there is, don't stir up the conflict. You know, don't be a pot stirrer in your marriage, in your family, at your workplace, at your school, anywhere out in human society. And all things at all times bring a Christ-like manner. You know, Jesus was an incredibly, extraordinarily forgiving person. You remember what he said when he's on the cross, having just had some soldiers drive nails through his hands and feet? As he's up on the cross, did he say, hey, Father, hurry up and send down the fire and brimstone and let me watch these people burn up? Did he? No. You know, the most extraordinary response to having been crucified that you can possibly imagine. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. His response is mercy, patience, forgiveness, understanding. If we approach the situations that we face as humans from that direction, you know, maybe somebody's just having a really bad day and they're off. I don't mean off as in off work, but I mean they're just mentally, emotionally, they're off. And back away and let it go. Maybe somebody's just perpetually difficult to deal with. At the same time, still, don't pour gas on it. Back off, be patient, merciful, and forgiving. Always remembering some simple things. We need patience from others for us too, do we not? I'm going to make you be honest and humble on this, all of them. We're called to be compassionate. We also need to receive compassion. We need to be willing to forgive others because we need to be forgiven ourselves. There's that humility coming in again. You know, I bring all of this up because, you know, we're actually not going to get the last part of the Sermon on the Mount, which would be the eighth Sunday of ordinary time. But unfortunately, next Sunday is not the eighth Sunday of ordinary time. It will be the first Sunday of Lent, which, interestingly enough, just happens to be a season of repentance. Oh my. Here's some good things to contemplate in preparation for celebrating the season, and I mean celebrating the season of Lent. Some behavior modification time is at hand. If you've been handling conflicts with those around you in a poor manner, that would be a really great time to change it. If you have been the cause of conflict towards others, now would be an absolutely wonderful time to change it. If you've been acting like the center of the universe, newsflash, you're not. Some people over here chuckled, the rest of you are looking at me like, huh? When did that change? It never did. You never were. And in all things, one thing that we fail to do so often when we get into all different kinds of human interactions, who do we need to remember to turn to first and immediately in every kind of human interaction that we face, especially when there's some sort of a conflict present? Go straight to God, who is just eagerly waiting for you and I to call upon him so that we might make manifest his son in that interaction and be a source of grace and a witness that there's a better way to handle our human lives with him while we're here.